Blog Talk Radio.
We are chilling here with Nico.
Nico,
we are chilling here with Nico.
Nico,
we are chilling.
Welcome to another fabulous edition of the Nico Cherie Show Live. Tonight we're going to be discussing none other than your finances for 2010. And I've been posting it out on Facebook all day about what you would do if you had $1 million cash, tax-free dollars, which would be cash for your home. And I've just been putting a lot of things out there today for people to start looking at and considering what they're going to do with their finances for 2010, because as we know, with the recession and the financial crunch that's been happening to everyone, a lot of people, including myself, have been in. So we have my co-host Sun on the line. Hi, Sun. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Nico. How you doing tonight?
Girl, I'm doing wonderful. I'm so glad this year is about to be over.
Yeah, we trying to get 2009 out of here.
Right. And so I have my two experts on the line. We have Natasha Reed, who has her own magazine called Fit Money Mag. And you can see her on www.fitmoneymag.com, as well as Mr. Sterling, who's another financial guru and an expert and someone whose opinion I value heavily. On the line tonight. So they're going to be able to give you guys some financial information for the upcoming year, because I know I need it most definitely. So I'm going to go, I'm going to bring them on the line, and I'm going to turn this music down. This is getting on my nerves tonight. But I'm going to bring,
you got the music jamming.
Right. So I'm going to bring Natasha on the line and go ahead and let her introduce herself as well as her organization. Hi, Natasha. How you doing?
Hi. Good night, everyone. Hello, Nico. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, most definitely. So go ahead and introduce yourself to the audience and tell them what it is that your company does and how you can possibly assist them with their financial needs.
Sure, that's not a problem. I'm the editor and publisher of Fit Money Magazine, and what we do is basically help young, and I shouldn't say young, but budding entrepreneurs figure out how to maneuver the business waters. In terms of what I do personally, I do through my other organization, Making Millions with Wings, teach financial literacy, showing people how to actually look at money, not just as something to get them things, but it's a tool to really help them build the lives that they want and create the futures that they want and how to actually control it.
Right. And I'm going to bring my other guests on the line because I posed a question tonight and I wanted to get both of your opinions. Like I said, if you had $1 million cash, would you purchase your home outright or would you finance it? And I have on the line with us a gentleman by the name of Mr. Sterling. Hi, Sterling. How are you?
Hello, Nico. Glad you're having me on this call.
Thank you. And the lines are already filling up, and we also have people in the chat room. So if you do have financial questions and you're in the chat room, please go ahead and type your financial questions in so that I can question our experts. And also, if you want to call in, the number to call in is 347-855-8673. And Mr. Sterling, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and kind of give people a little bit of a background information on you.
Well, as Nico said, I know a little bit about the financial industry. I'm thoroughly immersed in it. I am commodities and currencies trader, so I do understand the value of currency. Not necessarily calling it money, but currency. And what it actually is a resource to help you achieve status. I'm also, as Natasha, I also teach financial literacy within the inner city young black America, actually, and try to get people to understand that it's not what you have or what you get right now for money, but what money and the resource of currency that you have in the future. Understand the value of credit, how to keep your credit intact so that you're able to acquire more resources to do more things to build a profitable lifestyle. Also, harp strongly on the two different misconceptions that's out there in America when it comes to money and resources and currency. People have the unfortunate, thing to deal with when people try to coordinate wealth with being rich, and they're actually two separate things. Rich is a state of mind. Wealth is a piece of status. So not
right.
Every wealthy person is rich. And it's unfortunate that a lot of wealthy people wishing they were rich right now because, unfortunately, because of the recession, it gave us a situation where it closed the gap and actually took some people off their high horses to bring them back down to reality. The blessing in the recession is now people that were not wealthy have the opportunity to take their rich moral standards and achieve wealth and learn how to maintain it once they have it. Because I can assure you, everyone on this phone, that the recession is not over and we will touch bottom again soon. But if you ever cleansed yourself of all the impurities of the bling mind state, you'll be able to achieve wealth with some rich morals and able to maintain a nice lifestyle.
Wow, well said. Well said. Because we do, it's funny that you said that finances and being rich or wealthy, that's true. And, in fact, a couple of weeks ago, a gentleman was on the line, and he said that he despises when a woman says that she wants a man to be financially stable. And he said that there's no such thing as financially stable. And I said, there is a such thing as financially stable. It's your mind, a state of mind.
Absolutely.
If you understand how to manage your money and take care of the business you need to take care of, then you'll be stable because you can make mistakes, but you won't be as prone to make mistakes. You won't have, like Mr. Sterling said, the bling mentality.
And it's wonderful that you touched on that, Nico, because what everyone needs to realize is we all have the same bills. Just that some people's bills are bigger than others. We all have to pay our life bill. We all have to pay our rent or mortgage. We all have a car or a car note. We all like clothes. As long as you have what you are comfortable with, you'll necessarily have to keep up with the Joneses. And unfortunately, that's what happens with people when they start achieving some wealth or start getting more resources, so more money in their hands. They want to go right out and go buy the Benz. Well, why buy the Benz? You can buy you a nice car for $30,000, have $70,000 marinating somewhere where you can possibly catch an investment. That 70 grand turns into 210 grand. Now you go buy that Benz cash. Oh, no, don't buy it cash. Buy it through a loan program that's a guaranteed loan program that can actually build your credit while you're not stressed about making the payment. It's ways to understand the financial industry where you can actually put yourself in a position to catapult upward, and then once you get there, maintain.
Wow, well put. You know, so that brings me to the question that I posed on Facebook is, if you had, and I want both of you to answer this, and Pastor, I'll have you go first. If you had $1 million cash, would it be a good idea to purchase a home? And I'm going to give you a number so that we don't have a, you know, what if scenario. A $300,000 home, would you pay cash so that you would have no more debt liability with that home?
If I had $1 million outright, it depends on what that $300,000 home was. If it's a single family home, and I come from the point of view where you have to know what the difference between an asset and a liability. A lot of people buy homes and feel that their home is an asset. But an asset puts money in your pocket. And if your home is not putting money in your pocket monthly and it's not putting some additional spending cash or whatever it is, if it's not bringing in an additional income, it's a liability. And you have to determine if that liability is a good liability or a bad liability, because there's good debt and bad debt. Okay? So you really have to weigh your options with that. Now, for me, a single-family home, I wouldn't say don't buy it outright. My advice would be, yeah, buy it outright. Now, if it's a two-family home, that's different, because a two-family home, if you have a renter that's coming in, or even if you have a parent that's getting, or another family that's getting assistance in paying their rent, but either way, they're paying you to live there. Now you have the opportunity not to pay that home outright, because you're getting additional tax breaks on that additional income that you're receiving. So you have to really determine what your situation is. So it's not an easy question to say, yeah, just go ahead and jump and buy it outright. But for me, any single family home, if you can pick it up, you know, just go ahead and buy it outright. Now, what do you do with the money that you have left over? Now that you bought your home, it's paid outright, you know, what do you do? That's where knowing the difference between your assets and your liabilities, that's where that comes into play to say, okay, this is what I'm going to do with that money that I have left over. You have to have a plan. Anything that you sit down to do, you have to plan it out. You have to strategize. You bought your home outright. Well, instead of buying your home outright, why don't you buy another home and have that home pay for the one that you're in? You understand? And have that home pay for the both homes. So strategize what you're going to do with that, because everyone wants $1 million, but $1 million today is not what $1 million used to be in 1960. It's not what $1 million used to be in 1980. It's not what it used to be in 1990. And if you understand the value of what that dollar is, you'll see that that $1 million may not take you as far as you want it to, but it can
take
you
a million pennies right now.
Me a million.
I'm hard to say just that. I definitely would take $1 million right now.
I'm just saying, it will definitely take you a lot further than $10. But you have to have a plan for it. You have to know exactly what you want to do. A lot of people want to buy a lot of things outright. But if you take a look at people who win the lotto, they have all of this money, and then 5 years, 10 years down the road, they're back doing the same thing that they were doing before, because they never changed their habits.
That's
so
what Geraldine
you can
said. It's a state of mind. It is how you think about and how you look at your finances. So, Geraldine, I want you to jump in right now and go ahead and answer that question. $1 million cash, purchase a $300,000 home, right out, no.
I would say, and I agree with Natasha, and I think that is a excellent scenario, and it had to be what's comfortable for you, your personal comfortability. But my personal take on it is no. Cash is your resource. All
right?
My thing is, in order to build a nice kingdom, which is your home, You want to have cash, which is king. Everybody knows cash is king and credit is queen. Mm-hmm. If
right.
you have one without the other, the beauty in the house is always the queen. I'm just going to keep it real, brothers. Don't take that offensive.
Are we talking about me or money?
I'm talking about all you beautiful women out there because the queen brings the beauty to the house. And,
right,
and in this
right.
scenario, the credit is your queen. So when you have
right.
the king, which is your cash,
right.
the king will always, you know, unfortunately, it's you know, and this is how my, this is my opinion, this, and you know, I know other people may have other opinions, but this is my thought process. If you have $1 million cash, okay, that can go away tomorrow. I got something to sell you for $1.1 million. You buy it, you're broke. But
right.
if you have credit
right.
that's worth $2 million with $1 million in the bank, now you got your kingdom built with the stability of a king and queen. Now, to answer your question about would I buy the house outright, I would absolutely not buy the house outright. Would I put my resource, which is the cash, in a position where I wouldn't have to worry about the bill? That's what I would do. All these banks out here will give you a CD from $1 to $500,000, one way or another. You go purchase that $300,000 CD if the house is worth $300,000. Let's say you want the bank to make some money. I put $310,000 in there. Okay, you have a CD now that is just as valuable or more valuable than that cash because that CD will not depreciate, nor would it fall into some emotional situation that us humans have to want to spend it. So you take that $300,000 CD, you go to the person who's selling the house $300,000, and you go to the mortgage company and say, I want to buy this house with this CD.
Right.
Okay, the loan is secured. So now you have a situation where the loan is secured and you're getting those transactions on your credit report.
Right.
Which will show on-time payment, and let's say you got a 30-year note you paid off in 24 months. Oh, my goodness gracious. You're walking around with still $700,000 in the bank, a house that's paid off, and a credit report with a Beacon score of 800. You are immaculate. You are able to go to any bank in this country with that kind of resource on reserve and that type of an account installment account paid off pay early. You will be able to go to any bank and ask for as much money as you need, provided you have the discipline that Natasha talked about to understand what the money is. I think Biggie was
right.
prophetic when he said it. More money, more problems, and you have to understand the responsibility of having that kind of money in your possession.
Absolutely. And I tend to agree with Sterling, and not just because he's handsome, but because I was talking to someone earlier, and that was a question that they had said to me, and I was like, well, I definitely wouldn't want to spend my cash, but and I did, and I used a similar terminology, but more importantly, I was like, I would rather have use other people's money. Just to make it simple and plain. Other people's money is what I was thinking. So I'd rather keep my cash and use someone else's money. What were you saying, Natasha?
What comes with that, Nico, using other people's money, you also have to have other people's discipline if your discipline isn't there.
Right.
Because a lot of what's happening now, a lot of people wanted that whole, I'm going to get rich using the good credit that I built up. I'm going to go ahead and, you know, get into the real estate game. I'm going to flip houses. And I use that as an example because that's also my background, real estate.
Right.
They wanted to flip houses. They watched all these shows on TV, heard that it was a good thing. I can get in, do it in a weekend, and make all this money. But what they never realize is that people who trade real estate for a living, professionally, have a discipline. Before they sit down with the deal, they never fall in love with the house. They fall in love with the deal because
right.
they know what they want coming out, and they have a discipline for that because they sit down and they have a method. And if you keep going into money game with poor spending habits, you will always come out a loser. And right. A lot of people don't get that. You really have to sit down and say, okay, what is it that I want? What's my end goal? And then work backwards from your end goal. And if you don't know what the steps are between what you want and where you are, find somebody who can help you do that. And a lot of times we don't like to sit around and ask the right people. What we'll do is ask people who we think may and should could have known. And when we get in trouble, we go back to those people and say, well, you know, what happened? And they look at you like, well, why did you ask me? You can't ask just anybody. You have to ask professionals. Go seek the advice of those individuals that do what you want to do for a living. And if that means that you have to take them out to lunch, do so. What
right.
does it cost you? You know, a $50 lunch, and that's a really cheap lunch, just want you to understand. Okay.
Right.
But a $50 lunch is
right.
way better than a $50,000 hit, you know, $500,000 hit, where you're sitting in the hole trying to figure out how I'm going to get out of this, and the next thing you know, bankruptcy is looking really great. Bankruptcy at 20 is not the same as bankruptcy at 40 and 50.
Exactly.
It's totally different. That whole little 7-10 years on your credit report makes the world of difference as you get older. And a lot of people don't understand that if you're planning for retirement, if whatever you're doing now is to help you get to that retirement stage a lot sooner, you need to make sure that your plan is solid. You need to make sure that the risk that you take is calculated. And calculate it to your benefit, not to your detriment.
Right. I completely agree. And you know, one thing that our community has to do better at, which is why I'm having this show, especially at the end of the year, while people are wrapping up their last-minute things, is we have to have more training and more understanding about finances. And unfortunately, usually the way we find out is through trial and error. You know, and I'm speaking,
exactly.
you know, for myself and just so many things that I've seen happen. Like, I considered myself to be a very intelligent woman. I was in the real estate industry. I thought I knew what I was doing, and I ended up in the same situation as everyone else. And I never was big on, like Mrs. Sterling said, the cash is king, credit is queen. At first, I didn't consider credit at all. I had very little credit. The only credit I had was one credit card, my property, and my car note. That was it. That was it for my credit. And I paid everything else for cash. If I wanted a bedroom set to furnish my home, everything else was cash driven. And now, you know, fast forwarding to today, now I'm doing everything I can to repair my credit. I mean, everything I can. And I want to get into that too. So I'm going to go ahead and play a track, Von B, If You. And when we come back, I want you guys to go into a discussion about credit. If your credit is damaged, if you've been in bankruptcy, what people should do to try, what you think people should do to try to recover in this economy. We'll be back in a few minutes.
You owe me, you gotta show it. And if you need me, I'll never know if you don't open up. And sometimes, and I've been thinking about it, a real relationship. Deep my love goes, cause it shows. And baby,
Everybody, welcome back. That was Von B, If You, one of my favorite tracks that I dedicate to somebody out there. Anyway, so I have my experts back on the line along with my co-host Son. And when we left for the break, what we were discussing is the credit crisis that's going on. So we want to get started on that, and I want my experts to tell us how they think that our listeners can repair their credit to get back on track when they're recovering from foreclosure, bankruptcy, late payments, low income. What can a person do? Natasha, I'm going to start with you.
Oh, well, the first thing that I sit down with people and I ask them to do is be honest with themselves. What you have to look at what your spending habits are and what type of spender you are. Are you someone who, when you go to the supermarket, you fill out a list and you stick to that list? Are you a person that, you know, you go to the supermarket, you fill out a list, you stick to it, but, you know, at the checkout, you may see one or two extra things and you just pick it up? Or are you just, okay, I'm just going to go in there and get whatever I think I need and, you know, spend willy-nilly and hope everything works out? That's the whole
right.
reason why you got in the credit situation to begin with. Next thing is know your credit score. Don't be scared of it. And know how to order your credit report. It can get very costly ordering all three of your reports at the same time. And then after you order all three of them at the same time, order them again. You get one credit report a year free from the major credit bureaus. You don't have to order all three at the same time. You can get one every 4 months, and each one, even though they may have one or two creditors that may be a little different on each one, for the most part, they carry all of your credits that you have. If you take a look at that, go through each one. See if there are mistakes. Remember, it's people who's putting in your information. So people make mistakes. The computer doesn't make any mistakes because they follow what you say to do. So look, is your name correct? Is your date of birth correct? Is your address correct? Do they have you listed at multiple addresses? You know, that plays with your credit score. The creditors that they have listed, are they actually your creditors? Because a lot of times credit follows the address more than it follows the Social Security number because someone sees a name, it happens to look alike, and say, you know what? Well, they also have this address. We're not going to worry about the Social Security number, and we'll just throw that in, and they throw a Social Security number on as an alias. Verify
right.
that those aliases are not yours, and those little things that you do can bump up your credit score. And when you send it to one, send it to all of them at the same time, even though you may only have an Equifax credit report in front of you. Still send it to TransUnion and Experian. Say, look, I want to make sure that my credit file with you is updated and accurate, and here's that information. So when you
right.
order that following credit report, it should already be updated and accurate. And don't hesitate.
Mm-hmm. Right. I was just going to say that. A lot of people get intimidated about
mm-hmm.
looking at their credit score. They get intimidated about dealing with the creditors, and they don't know
mm-hmm.
what to do. Like I had a friend of mine who had a credit account show up on her credit report after a few years. So she needed to know, you know, how does she deal with that? Does she
mm-hmm.
contact them? You know, they're calling her job. How does someone deal with a situation like that? You have a creditor, they're calling you, this debt is old, and on top of that, the debt never should have been there in the first place. How would you deal with something like that?
You have to ask them to verify the credit. Get there. A lot of times, they're not going to take that information from you over the phone. You find out what their mailing address is. You sit down and you write the letter. And you You don't have to explain your situation from where the point that you're coming from. You ask them simply, I see that you're billing me for this particular, for this creditor, for this amount of money. I would like for you to verify that this actually belongs to me. Here's the information that, based upon what you have, here's my information. And you send that to them. I'm very leery when it comes to collection agencies, because a lot of times collection agencies, you have two types of agents that call you. It's like good cop, bad cop. You know, good collection agent, bad collection agent. And a lot of what you tell them, they can use it against you to do their job. So you have one collection agent that may call you and harass you. They'll go as far as they can within the legal limits to harassing you, but they won't call it harassment. And it's not technically harassment because they know they can be penalized for that. So they'll go as far as they can and with the intimidation, but they're not really intimidating you. But you already feel intimidated. Then you have the other collection agent that will call. That will be really nice. They'll be your friend. They'll just tell you that they're trying to help you out. And meanwhile, they're collecting information that they want to use against you. You
right.
have to be very clear with what you're calling for and
right.
asking them to verify that debt for you.
Exactly. So, Mrs. Marilyn?
Yes.
I'd like to get your input on that.
The credit situation in America, how to repair your credit, is that the question we're answering right now? Actually, how to repair it or just speaking
yeah,
on the
one,
credit?
Several things. One, how do you start to repair and deal with credit issues? And two, if you do have an account on there that is not your account, how do you go about getting that account removed without giving them too much information to be able to back you into a corner?
Well, as Todd said, I'm going to deal with the latter first. If it's not yours, just say it's not yours. That's it.
Right.
Send them a letter. It's not yours. Verify who you are with your name, address, and with your social. Write a letter under, you know, don't make it too wordy. Make it about, you know, 100 words, a little small paragraph, a couple of sentences. And just say, this is not mine. Please remove this account with the number highlighted or in parentheses from my credit report. And they
right.
have to remove it if they can't verify it. Now, the situation that I really want to speak on to everyone that's on this phone is understanding that you're not fooling anyone but yourself. Everyone on this phone can probably understand just about to the, I know, the fraction of how much gas they have in their car. Right now, you got your car, you know how much it half tank, quarter tank, full tank. I just filled up. I got an eighth of a tank. I'm on E. You know how
right.
much gas you have in your car. You know?
Right.
So pay attention to your credit report times five how much gas you have in your car. That's more important to your life than actually the gas in your car, believe it or not. And you know who you owe money to. If
mm-hmm.
you got behind, you know what happened. So before they call you, you call them. Be proactive about your situation, as it might be embarrassing, it might make you feel a little less than what you're used to feeling, but it will go a miles further in your financial livelihood by you approaching them with the situation about them approach before they approach you. Because you know if you're late with your payment, you know if you decide not to pay that cell bill, you know if you decide not to pay that store card, that gas card, that mass card, that means you know. Call them first. Explain your situation. You'll be surprised how many points that gathers with them as far as your account before they send them to collections, before they start putting dings on your credit 30 days late, 60 days late, 90 days late. Talk to them. They want their money. Because all your credit report says to anybody in the world, when it gets to the nuts and bolts of it, what kind of thief are you? That's it. Can I trust you to give me my money back? If you went and got a mink coat out of Macy's or Saks Fifth Avenue tomorrow and put it on a credit card, $5,000, walked out of there and never paid that credit card back, you still have the coat. And you still can act like you got it going on.
Right.
Now, you go to that same Saks Fifth Avenue walk in there, try to get that mink coat, stick it in your coat you have on right now, walk out, oh, you're busted, you're going to jail. So you tell the world what type of person you are by that credit report. Now, it may have nothing to do with you. You might be one of the nicest persons on the planet, but unfortunately, on paper, this type of person looks like a person that should be in jail.
Right.
But if you are proactive and explain to each creditor the situation, you may have lost your job. Things may have gone bad. They understand. They're feeling it just as much as you are. Work out a plan to where that situation doesn't get as bad as it can. When you're going into repossession, you're going into, you know, closed accounts, into collections and things of that nature. And if things have gone that bad, understand, once they've gone to the bottom, which is collections, now, believe it or not, it's amazing how the financial system works, and you must understand, business is always business, never personal, never get emotionally attached to any business transaction you make. I should have said that first. So once it gets to the worst it can get, which is to a collection agency, never, ever, and this is something you want to take with you, never, ever pay that collection agency what that account is worth, unless it's the IRS. You want to make sure you work out with them and be nice to
right.
them. XYZ collection agency calls you and say, I have an account that you had with Macy's. It's $1,500. We want you to send this, blah, 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 blah. Like Natasha said, they're going to harass you. They want to get that money. They want to get that money because it's already been charged off by the company. That's how collection agency make their money. How much money after 30 to sometimes even 10% of the amount that they recoup gets paid to the manager, the agent that's on the phone, pays their light bill, pays their, you know, payroll and so on and so forth. So now what you're doing is negotiating. And then once you get to that point, you're negotiating, you keep that power in your pocket. So if it's a $1,500 deal, you got to settle for $1,000. You tell them you want in writing, you'll send them this $1,000 upon sending them, put it in writing that they will get that taken off your credit report.
Right.
And be clear on that. You want everything in writing. The child said you won't do it over the phone. You want
mm-hmm.
things in writing. You want things clear. Because you have to have it clear.
Mm-hmm. And just to piggyback on that, if anybody has an opportunity to see a movie called Confessions of a Shopaholic, there's a scene in there where a creditor is chasing down this woman who has positioned herself as a financial expert simply because of she knows she's a shopaholic and she knows the bad side of credit and how to deal with that. The creditor is chasing her down, and he goes to her job, and while he's on the phone, he's telling someone else how creditors get paid, and he's explaining to them that you need to do whatever it is that you need to do to get them to pay you the full amount. He's not asking for a deal or a cutback or anything. He's telling them if you have to be nice, if you have to be mean, whatever it is you need to do, do it to get them to pay you the full amount. And he explicitly says, because this is how we get paid. The collection agencies buy your credit, like Mr. Sterling said, for pennies on the dollar. You know, you could owe Macy's $5,000, and they may buy it for Macy's for $1,000 because Macy's just wants to get rid of it, period.
Right.
And then you wind up paying them the full amount. You're not paying Macy's. You're paying someone else. You're paying, you know, someone else who's actually taking that money now, and everybody's getting bonuses. This is why the
right.
collection agency game is such a big, it's a big industry. Do understand, the credit industry is a multi-billion-dollar industry, but if you know how to work that industry, it can work to your advantage instead of your disadvantage.
Absolutely.
In fact, I was reading today, and, you know, this is not advice or anything like that. It was just something that I had seen, which was, and son, you've been so quiet tonight.
The son is taking notes.
I'm getting my toe crushed because, of course, it's New Year's tomorrow, and I really don't want to hear about my bad credit. I'm trying to go out and spend money, but, you know, it's all absolutely true. So I'm actually listening and making sure that I am doing the correct things. You know what I'm saying? Because sometimes we just don't want to hear that, to be perfectly honest with you. We want to use that word, we're in the recession, everybody's doing it, and that's not true. Everybody's not feeling the recession. Only the ones that didn't take care of their financial ends and doing what they're supposed to do are feeling the recession. You understand what I'm saying? So for me, I'm just sitting back listening. I don't, you know, you'll have to mute me after a while probably, but we're doing good. I'm good. I'm listening. My girls are even writing stuff down. They're like, do not ask for Jordans in February.
Right, but, you know, like I know so many people that even though they didn't feel the financial crunch and, you know, the recession tend to hit more people than usual, but
that
money management and bad credit management will have you in this situation, recession or not.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Recession or not, you could end up, you know, with a high amount of debt. You could, you know, lose your job for whatever reason. Someone said to me the other night, oh, I remember when you really had it going on, something, something, something. And I said, I was working a regular 9-to-5. And that company got bought out, you know, 6 months after I left. So how was that in your mind, really having it going on to be working for someone else and you don't know when that job or that so-called security can be taken from you? You just don't know. We have a caller on the line that I'm going to bring on who may have a question for our expert. Caller calling from 803-466.
Hey,
calling on the line.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Hi, how you doing? You have a question for our experts? Do you have something to add?
So I'm actually in the mortgage business. I work for Bank of America. And I was saying he is right about that. I've been in the business for about 11 years, and the credit industry is a multi-trillion-dollar business. Because you got to remember mortgages, and whether you're talking about subprime mortgages, FHA. I mean, it's, you know, the banks at this point right now, you know, with the financial crisis happening the way it did, the banks have actually gotten stronger because a lot of smaller banks are going out of business. And so now,
right.
You know, it's more important than ever that, you know, you really, really take care of your credit, because a lot of what's happening right now is that, you know, on the mortgage side of things, they're making it even more difficult for you. I'll give you an example. I had to turn down someone with an 800 credit score who was making over $100,000 a year on a loan.
Wow.
That's not a reality check. I mean, I've had to turn down numerous people. I mean, before you used to be able to get a loan, like say I had a guy who had a 750 credit score who had almost $200,000 in equity, and we couldn't give him a loan. So it's not a game right now. You have to really understand how, you know, the money works and how, you know, how to qualify for a loan. And there are a lot of resources out there, but people have to just be more vigilant than ever as far as, you know, the credit is concerned. And then also pay yourself first. You know, a lot of people still are not saving money. You know, they could be putting money in 401ks and IRAs, and a lot of people will not pay themselves first.
Mm-hmm.
That's important.
You know?
Yeah, that was very well put. Now let me ask you, being that you have the quote-unquote inside track, what are some things that people can do to be in a position to be prepared to buy? I mean, you're talking about an 800 credit score with a $100,000 a year job. I mean, what more could a person do?
Well, I would think that would be a secure situation. It was one of those unfortunate situations where her debt burden, she had, like, basically she was a lady from New York. She was a school teacher, or a principal to be exact. And she had other properties, and it was just the amount of debt that she was carrying.
Okay, her DTI, okay.
Yeah,
I was wondering, because I'm like, whoa.
But see, before those loans used to get done. I mean, we're even more liberal than most companies. Like, you go to a Wells Fargo won't even touch you if you're over 37%. And then if you got credit cards, even if you pay them off, they count the full amount of your line, you know, and your debt ratio, take 2% of it. You know, so it's crazy. So, like, you know, this lady, she has had a tremendous amount of debt, but we would have done that loan before because she had like $500,000 in an annuity. So it's just a lot different paradigm. Now, for people who are first-time home buyers, you know, what I always tell them is, A, you know, people really need to start, you know, living within their means. Like, you know, I see a lot of people doing this, and this might sound old-fashioned or chauvinistic, but if you're married and you're trying to buy a home, you should make that home based off one person's income. I mean, because at the end of the day, if one person loses their job, then the other person can basically, if they've been smart, they've been saving their money, And then if they should, you know, one person loses their job, the other person can basically move in and take over the payments and not have a lifestyle change. But see, what people do,
right.
I've watched this happen. People go and buy. I had these people in Virginia buying a $500,000 house, and they were making basically probably between them, they were both in the military. They might have made about $140,000 between them, but they live in a $500,000 house. Just because they're both in the military and they're looking at, you know, they got guaranteed income.
Now let me ask you this, because I always have like these racials, and this is just something that I just came up with myself, but I always said that, like for buying a car, I haven't really come up with a scenario for property yet, but my scenario for buying a car is your car should never be, the full amount, the full value of your car should never be more than a third of your annual income. So if you make $100,000 a year, your car shouldn't be a $70,000 or $85,000 car. Your car should be $30,000 or less. Total value.
Honestly, my thing with vehicles, I haven't had a car payment in a decade. I just don't do car payments. It doesn't make financial sense just because it's a depreciating asset. And at the end of the day, you know, if I were to do anything, you know, you'd be better off saving money, putting into investment, and then, you know, even if you wanted to go buy it, I mean, I see a situation where some people go buy it cash, and then if you want to get a secure loan, like, for instance, I bank with Navy Federal Credit Union, you know, there's a lot of ways you can be creative on getting that car finance. If you save the money and then get a secure loan against your own, ask you a CD loan, you can get a CD loan for like 3%. And go and finance that car that way. You know,
right. You sound like Mr. Sterling. Y'all been hanging out?
Well, you know, I've been on my own. Like, you know, I tell some people, you know, I get a little upset when I hear about all the things that parents did for them. You know, I basically got out the house, you know, at the age of 17 with the college, and I had to find my own way, and I stumbled into working with credit. I've been working with credit for about 14 years. I've been, you know, in the banking industry for 11 years consistently. So that's how I learned a lot of things. But I would say that, you know, when you start talking about vehicles, you know, everything is timing too. You know, buying a car at the right time. I mean, my first brand new car, I want to say, is I was actually in the Coast Guard at the time. I bought it in 1996. It was a 97 Honda Accord. I bought it in December of 96 and got it at like $100 off the invoice. And then when the car got totaled by, it was actually an act of God. It actually got flooded out. There was a, you know, I went to school in South Carolina, so the school, there was a flood, and when it flooded out, I walked away with $3,000 because I had bought it basically with equity in it. So, you know, people don't know how to negotiate, you know. I mean, that's one thing we don't do well, is that we don't negotiate now. You go like...
Right, and I need you to hit me on my Facebook. I need you to hit me on my Facebook inbox because, what state are you in?
I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina, in the headquarters of Bank of America. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Bank
is
the capital of the United States.
Right.
Well, the second, yeah, because, you know, it was getting kind of scary there because the new mayor, you know, we got a black mayor of Charlotte now, so I think he went to Obama and asked him to see if he can make sure Bank of America stay here because Ken Lewis is retiring tomorrow, and then his successor, Brian Moynihan, was over Merrill Lynch, and they were trying to get someone from New York to come and take over, but it looks like they're going to keep everything in Charlotte. It would decimate this area if you take Bank of America out of a town like Charlotte. So, you know, they're keeping everything here, which is a good thing.
You know what the stock price is on Bank of America right now?
It's like $15. You know, it wasn't...
And a few months ago, it was $4.
It was actually below that. Actually, it was in March, it went down to like below $3 at one point.
$2.70.
Wow.
Yeah,
right.
I did some options on it. I got in and I did all right with it. But you know, right now, I mean, they paid back TARP funds, so it actually, the price went down because at the end of the year, you know, people, the mutual fund managers, you know, dumped some of the stock, and then they also liquidated, you know, you know, getting additional money from capital raising, so that basically diluted the share. So yeah, you'll probably see once the they start looking at the first quarter. If they, you know, without the TARP funds, you know, they're going to probably be very, you know, very profitable first quarter if the the losses and stabilizes in the other business units. So, yeah.
Right. Now, let me ask all you guys then. What type of trends do you see picking up that people should pay attention to now? And, Colin, I'll start with you. What type of trends do you see right now that people should be paying attention to?
As far as investments or with the financial picture of the Americas looking like?
With the financial picture in general.
Pay attention to the interest rates. Bernanke is our Fed chair right now, and he will be raising interest rates. And that will increase the value of the dollar, the American dollar, but it will also start increasing what your mortgage is, what your house notes are, and what your car notes are. You know, to pay attention and try to get a plan for execution of what you want to do financially and execute that thing to the T without varying left to right. Because once those interest rates start raising, things are going to be changing, unfortunately, with less job creation. So I think the interest rates are going to soar higher, faster than job creation is. And, you know, you want to make sure you pay attention to what's going on with your investments. If you have cash on the sidelines, you might want to purchase a couple of CDs, you know, because you're going to be able to get a couple more points on that because of the base interest rates going up. Also, you might want to be a little more leery about getting a $500,000 house and step that thing down to a $300,000 house because of the interest rate in which your monthly note might be if you're not going to purchase it outright. My question is, my Bank of America man, now that I got him on the line here, it's, what did you think of Ken Lewis?
Ken, what did I think about Ken Lewis?
Yeah, what did you think about his performance level?
I mean, you know, it'd be kind of difficult for me to say, you know, what I think, only because he did 40 years of service with that company. And
right.
I can only say under the circumstances, pretty much he had a gun put to his head in a sense, just because if he didn't do it, you know, we'd be fucked pretty much. We'd be in a very bad situation. I'll put it to you this way. What the word was is that if, you know, Bernanke didn't have a gun when he told him that, you know, he could be removed, he should have had a gun. I mean, it was that
well
serious.
Put.
Like, well, if he had not bought Merrill Lynch, the potential calamity could have been this. All asset values would have fell to zero because there would have been no buyers and sellers because Merrill Lynch is a major market maker. So they would basically, so all asset values would have fell to zero, and then we would have had depression times five.
But did that compound with that purchase of Merrill Lynch with the already acquisition of Countrywide?
Well, you know, the Countrywide acquisition, some will say that was the worst of the two acquisitions. Merrill Lynch is actually helping them make money. Because,
absolutely.
Because I actually used to work for Countrywide, and you know, what I'll say about that is Countrywide was actually a very good company. Where they,
yeah,
where
I got my first home loan through Countrywide.
Where they went off the rails was they were advertising one thing and doing another. They were saying telling people that, you know, subprime loans only accounted for 3 to 5% of the portfolio. And they actually accounted for probably more like 8 to 9%. So, you know, you're talking about 1 out of 10-year loans are subprime loans in some way, shape, or form. And if you really get technical, the non-conforming loans, they just dress those up a little bit. But they say, for instance, you used to be able to get a loan called, we call it a ninja loan. No income, no asset. Where, I mean, this was the craziest loan
you had
ever
a heartbeat,
in my life.
You got one.
Right.
I mean, it was this loan. You could get up to 95% of the purchase price or the appraised value, depending on the transaction type, with a 720 credit score. I mean, you didn't have to verify anything. And then they even have loans where you didn't have to show how much you made, just you'd be able to say you had a job, and they'd give you 100% on an 80-20.
No doc.
You would document your assets, but you didn't have to show your income. You would state where you work at. It was crazy, some of the loans that they had. And, I mean, we used to close loans like, the, you know, people talk about how painful it is to refinance now. We used to be able to close certain loans in less than, I've actually had a loan close in a day. I've had loans on the same day because we had loans where the fast and easy loan or the fast track loan where we would get the internal pay. I mean, we had it down to science. Like, if you called in at 10 o'clock in the morning, sometimes we have your docs ready by 7 o'clock that evening.
Wow.
So, you know, it was literally like, but these are good quality loans. I mean, some of the loans, what it was like, you know, they already had a loan with us. They never missed the payment. You know, we would do an online appraisal. We would basically state the income. They had the same job for the past 2 years, use the same income figures from the old application. There was no debt ratio requirements. Usually it was going to be a better interest rate or a shortening term, something like that. We get the title report ordered. We had a title company that gets you a title within 4 hours. We get the payoff in less than 2 hours. Next thing you know, by the time it's all said and done, the closing will be scheduled and it'll be done at 7 o'clock after you get off work. I mean, so it was just, we just moved at such a velocity that, you know, we were able to push out. That's why we had such a large portfolio. Like when the merger happened, we had more loans than Bank of America. We had $1.3 trillion in loans, and they only had like $800 to $900 million.
You know what I'm really impressed with? I'm really impressed with that I have two black men. I'm assuming what the other one is over there in Charlotte. I'm really enjoying this conversation. I'm letting you guys have a dialogue because some people on my line are not going to have these types of dialogues. They're not going to hear these types of conversations. And though some of the things that you guys are discussing were over their heads, I think that it's good for them to hear the types of conversations that go on regarding the financial industry. So maybe something that they said will pique your curiosity and you'll open up Google and go Google the Bank of America executives and Google the financial industry and start to learn some things and equip yourself for 2010. Like they said, you're having 800 credit scores with $100,000 a year. Look at your debt-to-income ratio. Look at the financial trends that are going on in the market and start preparing yourself to be able to compete.
Well, we're starting a movement. Actually, me and another brother, I got kind of bamboozled into doing the show because I had no intention. I've been on Blog Talk for about 2.5 months, and he, I was supposed to kind of just be co-piloting. And then he said, "Why don't you go ahead and set up the show?" So he tricked me into setting up the show.
So basically,
we got this thing we're doing on Mondays called Ujamaa Black Wall Street. We're trying to recreate the concept of a Black Wall Street. And we're doing
that
Monday.
I'm serious. I really want you to hit my inbox.
I really want you
to hit my inbox with your information because I think we may be able to work on something together because my show is about information. And, you know, when I have my, you know, high drama shows and, you know, I have baby mamas going crazy on baby daddies, you know, people want to listen. But they're going to get this information shoved down their throat if they have to. I don't really care. Because one thing that minorities need to start understanding is that if you, like I put on my Facebook, if you don't know how to play the game, you cannot win in 2010.
You won't be
you can't win in the 21st century.
And it's others like us. It's not. I mean, like I said, I happen to stumble upon this brother. He's an insurance agent. He's been an insurance agent for many years. He owns his own insurance brokers in Virginia. He's from New York originally, and so we hooked up and we started talking. Brother named Kala. And so we ended up talking, and so we ended up discussing this whole concept of the Black Wall Street. And for those who don't know who Black Wall Street is, you know. Back in, I believe, the 20s, there was a neighborhood or area of Tulsa, Oklahoma, where there's black people who are very successful.
There's an entire community in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah, there's a community.
Mr. Carolyn, don't you know something about that?
I'm gonna let my man do his explanation because he's got some more recent history on it. But what I can associate it with is that, does everybody understand, that's where the Gap Band got their name from. The three main streets throughout that community was started with a G and an A and a P. So that's where the Gap Band actually got their name from.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, finance is all tied into everything we do, right?
It's amazing.
Even our music.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's basically what we want to recreate, that whole concept, because, you know, we want to deconstruct this whole notion that, you know, black people are poor. Black people, they've already started doing the research on this, but they said the black population in this country has the buying power equivalent to a G8 nation. So you're talking about over $1 trillion, and they've already, you know, said that for the Hispanics and then the Asians, we have the most buying power. So we're not poor.
Right.
We just don't allocate our resources properly.
Right. And I'm so glad that you said that, because I have a show. I have a show that I'm going to do early next year, and I'm going to invite you guys to listen in or participate in that show. And I want you guys, when you get a chance, to go to this website. Google it. It's 10-10-50. The 10-10-50 plan for the Black community getting financially stable and putting our money back into Black business and back into Black community. And I think the plan is just really an awesome, awesome plan and something that needs to be heavily considered. But with what you're saying, you are so right. I mean, so right. I just can't even stress it enough. Like, I try to teach, I have a seven-year-old. I try to teach my seven-year-old financial management. That kid had the same $20 that I gave him in May.
Mm-hmm.
He won't buy a bag of Doritos.
Now you
got to
show him how to grow it. Now that's what
right.
You show
he wants to. Yep. Mm-hmm. I took him to E-Trade. That's how I knew about the Bank of America stock at the time. Because we were looking at stock prices, and I was showing him, you know, if you put your $4 in, you know, his goal is, he said he wants to be a multimillionaire by the time he's 18. So,
have you shown him the thing on TV with the kid from Chicago who's 14 and he has $50,000 in assets already?
No, but I'll look that up on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. He's 14 years old. The kid, his mom is a financial planner. She gave him a little bit of money for sneakers, and he turned it to 50 grand.
Right. So, I mean, those things are the things that we need to start teaching not only ourselves but the next generation. Like, I don't want, you know, my seeds to make the same mistakes that I did. I want them to do better than I did financially. And I'm glad you brought up the point about the trillions of dollars. I was astounded to see they said that the Black community, African Americans, will be responsible. I think it was like $3.2 trillion by 2012.
Mm-hmm. And actually, there's a study being done right now by the University of Michigan that's actually studying how Blacks spend their money. And we need to recognize, if they're studying how we spend our money, there's a reason for that.
Right.
You know, there's a reason why they choose to study a particular group of people and how they spend their money, because they want to know how they can get that money from us, not how they can put that money back in our community. And if we learn to spend money within our community, and not just at our store, but where are our banks? If we have this amount of wealth, where are we banking? Why is it that we don't have our banks anymore? You know, there was a time that you had many Black banks, and especially in African-American communities, you can find one. Now, the amount and the quality of banks in African-American communities are slim to none. And
now, let me ask all of you guys this, okay? So, we have the four of us actually speaking on the line. We have a few people that are listening as well in the chat room and on the internet, but with the four of us on this line right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we all have this information, and, you know, I am being proactive by broadcasting this segment. You're being proactive by doing your blog talk. Mr. Sterling is out in his community, and Natasha has her own magazine, and she also does other things in her community. What's stopping us from, if the four of us can congregate here, what's stopping us from changing the dynamic of being a $3-something trillion spending group and take that money and invest it back in ourselves? What's stopping us from doing that? What would you say?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding, and there's a lot of self-hatred. I mean, that's the things, like, you know, I'm not quite the strain of being a full Black nationalist. Like, I don't necessarily want to go back to Africa. I think we need to work on what we got going here. And
right.
I got some brothers that they kind of that strain, but it really doesn't matter to me. I'm one of those people, I'm above, you know, ideology and all that stuff, you know, regardless if you're a Muslim, Hebrew, Israelite, five percenter, Christian, whatever, it really doesn't matter because we're all suffering under the same hand of oppression. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm at. So, you know, we talk about this all the time. There's a couple brothers. Actually, you know, what's funny, you know, my thing is, like, I try to get, you know, four of the hosts from Blog Talk together. It's not that they haven't been wanting to do it, but just the scheduling. But, I mean, just something as small as that, they all basically have a similar subject matter. So let's all get together, you know, and join forces and share information and sort of challenge each one of your listeners, because some of these guys have, I mean, large listenerships. You know, some of these guys have, you know, who might get 40, 50, 60 people listening to the show at a time. Challenge one of your listeners to get one more person to come to your show. And get them to get one more person to come to your show, and then you spread the information. And that's what we're doing. Like, you know, like this past week, Monday, I talked about, you know, last week it was credit, and I extended the conversation on credit to talk about the fundamentals and basics of banking. And then we're going to continue the fundamentals and basics of banking along with the need and understanding for why we need to be homeowners. So that's going to be again next week. So those are the types of things that we're doing. I think if, you know, I think we have to get beyond the whole concept that, you know, that none of us actually know what's going on. You know, because there's a perception that, you know, if someone that looks like us says something, that they're not as credible. But if someone of another complexion says something, they'll believe it. I've experienced that even in this business. Like, you know, I told a couple, a black couple, about an FHA streamline loan that they didn't even know that they qualified for. And
that exactly? I like to hear what the FHA streamline loan is.
Well, when you get your loan, they should tell whoever does your loan. They don't tell you about the FHA streamline program. It's the equivalent of mortgage malpractice, because when you do, they just made some recent changes to the program. But basically, the FHA streamline program allows you to refinance your loan. As long as you've been on time for the most recent 12 months, they'll refinance the loan. You don't have to document your income. They basically let you go ahead and redo the loan. And that's one of the biggest things with FHA loans, is the documentation aspect of it. Now they require you to pretty much get an appraisal, because if you don't get the appraisal, they'll make you come to the table with money for, like, you know, attorney's fees and closing expenses. But basically, it is a program that's a lot easier to qualify for than a standard FHA loan. It's a lot faster. So I tell people about it, and they're like, what? I was like, yeah, so you qualify. I just had a guy today, you know, he had a FHA loan and didn't know anything about it. He said, I could qualify for that. I was like, yeah, so we can do it. So
now let me ask you, do you have to already have an FHA loan, or can you just have a... Okay, so only if you have an FHA loan, you qualify for FHA Streamline if you've had on-time payments for the past 12 months.
It's meant for... Because it puts you through hell to get the loan in the first place. So, you know, so the whole reward behind it is once you get the loan, then, you know, you don't have to work nearly as hard. And you find those types of streamlined refinance loans on FHA, VA, and, like, rural development loans. Any type of government loan usually has that feature to it. And then,
explain the term streamline. What benefit would streamline bring to the people? Just so everyone listening on the conversation can really understand what a streamline loan can do for you in this economy.
Well,
right.
A streamline loan, I'll give you an example. Say, for instance, you lost your income. One of the people on the loan lost the income, and so only one person is working. They don't do any debt ratio calculation. So therefore, even if, you know, you need, say, for instance, both people to qualify on a traditional loan, if one person only has an income, and say, for instance, I had a guy who had an 8% FHA loan, and his wife lost her job, so I was able to cut their rate from 8% to, like, I think 5.25%. So it took their payment down by almost, I think, $250, you know, because they had the loan for so long, and I was just able to redo it on 30 years. So it was a long-term solution for them. So basically, their credit was messed up. So because they had all these collections and all that stuff on the FHA streamline, they don't look at – they pull your credit, but they don't look at the outside credit, outside of the mortgage. I mean, you literally could, you know, have a $30,000 charge off on the FHA streamline. It doesn't matter. They look at strictly your recent mortgage history. So that's one benefit. You know, like I said, depending upon what your financial situation is, if you're on a market, for instance, where you know your home value is going down, you can still do the FHA streamline without an appraisal, but what it will mean is that you'll probably have to bring 1.5 to 2 months payments to closing, which is okay because once the loan closes, you'll get a month off from making a payment anyway.
Exactly.
So you basically, so it's a great program. Everyone that can get into it is great. So I tell people about it all the time. And it's like I said, for most government loans, it's not just FHA. It's like VA loans are like that, as well as rural development loans through USDA. So if you can get into one of those, it's great, especially in an economy where people have lost their income. But you do have to have a job. You do have to have a job, but they don't verify the income. They just verify that you're working.
Wow. I mean, this is some great information, a lot more information than I was expecting for you guys to be able to give to my listeners. But I'm really glad that you called in to give your information to us because it's extremely helpful. And in this economy, a lot of people like, I'm looking to purchase again in 2010. And I just had my credit pulled, and it wasn't nowhere near as bad as I thought it was, nowhere close. And so I'm doing different things.
Do you own a home now?
Huh?
Do you own a home now?
No, I don't own a home now. I lost my home in the first wave of foreclosures back in 07.
Okay. How long has it been since it's been discharged as far as the disposition of the foreclosure?
It's been over 2 years. So in 2010, it'll be almost 3 years.
Well, let's be specific, because this is something you might want to consider. When you pulled your credit, right?
Right.
Did they say when the redemption date is? Because what they look at, what lenders look at is, let's say, for instance, if you get evicted or you leave your home in a certain year, it takes
mm-hmm.
them sometimes anywhere from 6 months, a year to 2 years, because depending on what state was it in?
California.
Okay. California is a deed of trust state. So what that means is that, you know, typically the actual mortgage itself is held in a trust with a trustee.
Right.
And
right.
So they can move a little faster, and they don't necessarily have to go to court.
Right.
And so they may have taken the deed back and given it back to the lender. So the date in which the actual consummation of the foreclosure is going to be the date when the lender took back title to the property. So you need to find out exactly when that happened, and then the guidelines, depending on the program you're looking at, is going to be anywhere from 3 to 5 years.
Right. Well, the lender said that it would be the summer of 2010.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
That's what I was told. So you know, I'm hoping that.
Well, I'm gonna tell you, do yourself a favor, because a lot of times when you talk to someone up front, and you know the way they got saying, I'm just telling you how a loan officer thinks. They're looking
right.
at it. They're not looking at okay, this is not real business for them at this point. So they're not going
right.
to invest nearly that amount of time into it. What you can do is, at your county, you can find out from the Register of Deeds when it actually changed hands, like when it went from being, you know, under your name from the trustee to the lender, and the date at which the lender takes it back, that's the clock. And I've actually had firsthand experience. A friend of mine who was in the military had a
right.
situation where his house got vandalized, couldn't sell it, couldn't get insurance. He went to give back the deed, never made a late payment. And then they held on to it for 2 years. And
so what did he do, a deed in lieu?
He did a deed in lieu. And then, see, what I told him to do is get an attorney. Well, he didn't listen. So, of course, he didn't listen.
How we do.
So he,
right.
So exactly. He's like, I'm doing it myself. You know, he asked me for advice, but then go do it the way he wanted to do it. So,
yep.
Right.
He went.
All the time.
So he went, and then they basically said, okay, we'll work with you. Well, okay, they worked with them right, and they ended up still calling foreclosure because, see, if they had been done the right way, it could have, you know, they basically could have redid it, and then they could have went right back to that same lender and got another loan. So they
right.
had to wait 3 years. Now, the way it was the weirdest one I've ever seen, because it showed an M8 on the credit, but they didn't have any late on the mortgage.
Wow.
So they basically had to stop making payments so they could legally start the foreclosure process. But it was like kind of what they did is a compromise with him. They didn't ding him for late payments, but it showed as an M8. because when I pulled the wife's credit score, her credit score is still over 680. So
wow.
It never really, so it affected them, but it affected them from the standpoint they couldn't get a traditional loan. But,
right,
you know.
Because that's the way they wanted to affect them.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, I was able to get them an exception on a subprime loan, but it was going to be like a 7% rate, and she wanted to wait. You know, but, so I can understand that. But the bottom line to it was, you know, they wanted to wait, and then I told them, you know, basically, anytime you deal with the mortgage companies or any credit, you know, get something to write it, and he just didn't do that, and it kind of screwed him over. So he had to wait
right.
from, he started in 2001. They didn't take back the title until 2003, so he wasn't able to buy until, like, 2006.
Wow.
So that's what I'm saying. You need to find out the exact date, and you can go to the registered deed. You can go to this website called Netronline, NETRONLINE, look up the county in which your property is located, and then if you can look up your address or call the registered deeds and tell them that you were formerly the owner, and they can tell you, you know, when the title transfers took place. And that's the date
okay.
you need to work
great
on.
Great information. Well, what was
could
that
you repeat
again?
That again?
Right. You go... You go to the county?
Yeah, you go to NETRONLINE. I think I can put it in your chat room.
In the chat room? Yeah, go ahead and type it in or put it on my Facebook page.
Yeah, and then from there, you know, have you been talking to NACA?
No, I haven't spoken to anyone. I just started this process yesterday.
No, you need to go talk to NACA. I got my cousin going through NACA. She's getting a 2% interest rate.
Yep.
She getting a 2% interest rate for 30 years, and with NACA, the difference between them and other mortgage companies, see, they get their funding through Bank of America, Citi, and Wells Fargo, a couple other banks. And so basically, how it's gonna work out for her, she's getting money through some down payment assistance through a community second program. Most of the states will have money for first time home buyers.
Right. So I'll be considered, even though I lost my home because it's been 3 years, I'll be considered a first-time home buyer again.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so she's getting money to buy down her interest rate through points. Now, points are typically paid in exchange for a lower interest rate. So the benefit here is that NACA, the way they do it is, it's not like the traditional sense of how like a bank does it. Like if you pay 1 point on a loan, at, say, Bank of America, and it's a $200,000 loan, that's 1% of the loan amount, and that's equal to, say, $2,000. Each point is supposed to give you back a certain amount of interest rate, but there's a limitation on what you can get because they're still not going to give you the absolute lowest rates because they're there to make money, right? Now, when NACA does it, 1 point is equal to $1,000, and each point you pay is equal to 0.25% off of your rate. So you could technically, if the rate for NACA right now is at 4.25, if you're willing to pay 17 points, they'll let you get the lowest rate they'll let you get. They won't let you get zero. They'll let you get 0.125% for the life of the loan. So you're basically all So you know. So
what are the guidelines? What are the guidelines and stipulations? Like, is there a maximum?
What, as far as the amount of points you can pay?
No, as far as amount of loan, the dollar amount of the loan.
Yeah, it's based on the county. It's based on the county that you're looking to buy in. So they have it. They have like their own grid. What part of California?
Well, I'm actually in Georgia now. So.
Oh, you're Georgia. Oh, even better.
Yeah.
Georgia.
Oh, even better.
Program.
All right.
Georgia, they had this. Well, Georgia had this program at one point. Where they were doing up to, like, depending upon your income, sometimes they were, like, say, for instance, if it was a $250,000 purchase price, they were given up to, like, almost 20% on a forgivable loan.
Really?
Wow. If you look up under Georgia Housing Finance, there's, like, a whole bunch of programs. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a great program because, you know, I had a friend of mine who worked for GMAC Realty. His name is Ronald Gillard. So, anywhere for that's a great program. Let's see. I'm working on this right now.
Yeah,
so,
I'm telling you, if you don't hit me on Facebook, I'm gonna start stalking you on your show on Monday night.
I already added you as a friend on Facebook. Go check your Facebook.
Okay. Okay, because I mean this is great information, and I mean like I said, I want every single week. I want to give people the right information for them to be able to make the right decisions and make the right choices in 2010. And we got it. One thing that I don't even allow my son to say is we don't, or black people don't, because I feel like that perpetuates, even if it's the truth in whatever situation, I think that it perpetuates a certain negative connotation, because look at how we're all sitting here. Like I said, if we're all sitting here having these conversations and other people having these conversations, and we just got to bring like-minded people together and then share the information with those who need to know.
Absolutely.
You know, and we got to start a trend. I mean, if we can start a trend to where, I was thinking, I swear, when the economy collapsed, it was minorities that led it. Besides
nah,
the banking system,
they just need that nonsense up.
And the bad mortgage lending, because I know how many people I knew personally that were doing all kinds of stuff. And I'm not saying minorities just black. I had a lot of Asian friends. This is in California. Asians, Filipinos, I mean, they were buying up property like crazy. I know a few Asian cats are buying 10 properties, trying to do these slick flips, selling them to each other, you know? A lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them. But at the same time, being in that industry, everybody was eating real good. And even if you weren't in that industry, you know, you bought that house for $150 and turned around and sold it for $350, and you knew it wasn't worth it. You took that money and you bought you a brand new Benz, you know what I'm saying? And you sold that 3-bedroom, 2-bath for that 6-bedroom, 5-bath, and you was happy. And then when the economy collapsed, you start pointing fingers at everybody other than your poor decision making. So the next time around, you know, people, you know, closer to the time. I mean, if you look back in history, I was reading about the Great Depression, right? So I wanted to know what my focus should be now. So the best, to me, the best way to look at how I should be looking at things now is to go back and look at what started the upswing after the Great Depression, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing some research and looking at things that people did and what they were doing and weren't doing. And it's just some really interesting information. I would suggest that people do that. You know, look at past trends. Look at how things went. Because I know that we were 14 years in a 10-year cycle. So, you know, I felt personally it was going to take us at least 14 years to come out. We're not in a 10-year cycle no more, so maybe that cycle has expanded. Like, maybe it started out 5 years and it stretched to 10. Now we're looking at 14, 15 years for our cycles. You know, but everything has cycles. That's just the way it is. You're going to have ups and downs. That's why I don't really complain. I just try to see how I can manage in the good and the bad times.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
From a business standpoint, because I really like to help people focus on what their business is and should be doing at this time. This is really a good time for you to dig deep, see
right.
What the needs are for the people in your community. And when I say community, I mean the people that shop with you. Start asking those questions such as, what do you need? What do you want us to do? And sometimes it's very simple. A lot of times people just great customer service. And you will see that if you provide superior customer service to the people that come in, that word of mouth advertising didn't cost you a dime. It didn't cost you anything to smile to that person and say good morning. It didn't cost you a thing to say thank you and come again. And could you please tell your friend or tell us if we're not doing our job? That can bring another body in your store, in your location. Would you going to put another dollar in your coffer? But at the same time, a lot of times we don't look at the little things that we can do for free. You know, a smile doesn't cost you anything, but it can give you so much.
Absolutely.
Right.
We and that's the thing, the culture of us doing business. Like, for instance, when you go to a different culture, like you go to
mm-hmm.
a different country, you go to, like, Turkey, they have a culture of doing business with each other. You know,
right.
It's based on respect. It's based on, you know, mm-hmm. they forming a relationship and getting rapport and establishing
right.
bond and a kinship.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to get to a point of, where it's commonplace for us to do business. Like, one of my
right.
favorite businesses here in town is a soul food restaurant that actually won the Hoodie Award. Her name is LaWan's in Charlotte, right?
Right.
Now, what's unique about her is not her food, is because you feel welcome every time you come in her door, and she has an all black staff. And so she makes sure those girls is none of the attitudes and none of the rolling in that.
That's right.
Is nothing. And so when they come in, even if she's not having a good day, she tells them, you know, they have to deal with it. And so,
right.
You know, when you come in her store, you feel very welcome. And so I go back over and over again because of that, you know. Now, that's not to say they don't have the issues sometimes because they get busy and, you know, but it's just like the food is so good. Sometimes people, like, just line up in front of the store sometimes, and then it's the same people coming in over and over again. So,
wow.
You know, that's the thing, you know, we have to get to the point of, you know, when we deal with each other, not making things
right.
Based off of the lowest common denominator. That's because,
right.
You know, I'm black and you're black. They shouldn't expect anything else less than stellar service. But
right.
What happens is some people, they think, well, you black, so you're not used to expecting anything good, so take what you can get and be happy. You know, and we got to get away from that. You know, when someone calls, in fact, what you want to do is you want to treat them better so that they, you know, they'll talk about it. Because black people will talk if you do something well. Like I've
had
one
thing
lady,
we do, right?
Yeah, I had a lady send me 12 people. Because, see, when number one, like just like I said, you know, when I'm talking to someone on the phone, you know, they don't necessarily know right away, you know, what I am. You know, my name is Thomas Nelson. So all they know, I'm some dude, you know, with blonde hair, blue eyes. Well, that doesn't matter. That's beyond the point. The point is that when I'm talking to you, if a friend of a family or a family member sends me someone, you know, I'm not going to take liberties. I'm going to treat them with courtesy. I'm going to treat them with respect.
Right.
I'm going to return their phone calls. And then they're going to be like, well, so, I mean, and for some people, it's weird. It's kind of unsettling. It's almost like a situation where someone, you know, I want to make this statement, but like sometimes you ever dealt with a woman who hasn't been treated well, who's been not treated well, and then she gets someone who treats her really well, and she doesn't know how to respond to it. That's how we
right.
are sometimes, you know. And,
right.
and I've had that situation where, you know, I've treated someone very well, and then they're just like, well, you're not like such and such. You didn't do ABC. And I said, well, why should you expect anything less?
Right. Set the standard. And that's what, you know, and also hold people accountable
yeah.
when they don't follow through. Like, you know, I don't know, sometimes I am a little bit pushy when it comes to that stuff because I have expectations. And I don't think that the expectation should or the excuse should be, oh, you know how they are. I don't like that because that's not how it is for me with everybody I deal with. So
mm-hmm.
if I have to hold your feet to the fire, and, you know, I had a boss that was a white boss, and she used to say that all the time for her people she did business with. She didn't care who it was. If you're doing business with her and you don't do what you're supposed to do, she will hold your feet to the fire. And, you know what I'm saying? And she'll deal with you accordingly. And that's just the way business was done. You have expectations from people, and people live up to those expectations. And, you know, not to get too far off the topic and off the subject, but the point is that if we just change the way that we think, the way that we do business, and how our mentality is towards each other, that trillions of dollars can effectively start filtering back into the black community. People will have better spending habits, they'll have better credit habits, because you have so many people who are out there who have horrible credit, but they don't spend anything on their credit. They take the money that they have and they buy the latest outfit. They buy the latest Jordan. They have, you know, maxed out $40,000 worth of maxed out credit cards and no savings in the bank and mortgages to pay.
Well, you know, I've seen this.
I was saying that's so true, that we do spend a lot on things that make us look good, but we don't spend a lot on things that make us, you know.
Valuable.
Right.
Exactly. Thank
right.
you so much. You know, if we spend the same amount of money on our personal development, our personal growth, our personal education, you know, take a class on the weekend on just on anything in finance. If you don't understand it, how much can it hurt for you to go to your local community college or, you know, your local university and ask them, I'd like to take a class. You know, I just want to learn how money is. I just want to learn the basics, simply.
Well,
you know, a simple accounting class. How much is that worth to you over the long haul if it costs you $1,000 to do it? but it brings you so much more. How much is that really worth to you? Place value on things that are going to bring more value into your life. And that's what we're not doing. We're placing value on a lot of items and
right.
not placing value on the intangible things that actually put more in our lives and take away.
Well, I'll tell you what someone said to me a couple of years ago, and I was standing there, like I said, thinking I'm this intelligent woman. I know how to put things together. I'm successful, blah, blah, blah. And she said, it was a women's meeting, and she looked at all of us, and she said, let me tell all you ladies something right now. She said, when I drove up, I seen all these nice, you know, nice cars outside, and everybody smiling, you know, like, yeah, I'm successful, you know. And I was like, yeah, and I got the Escalade. That's me. And she bust out and said, if you're spending more money on your car note than you are on your child's education, something's wrong. And I swear, that stuck with me to this day. Because she's right. There's something wrong when how you look when you're driving down the street is more important than how you're feeding your kids' minds. Because these are the same minds that, you know what I'm saying? We're going to be complaining about the fact that, you know, Stanky Leg and Soulja Boy and all these other things are...
A lot of college education
you know what I'm
rolling
saying?
Down the street.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, that just really put it in perspective as to where we need to be leaning more towards as far as our kids' education and how we spend our money. Because I'm not going to lie, I like nice cars. I like nice things. And that's fine. And I'm not telling people to not have those things, but the balance is that it should be more of a heavy weight towards the things that matter the most, like education, like your savings, like preparing, you know, for your future. Darlene, what do you say?
Well, I think, like what she was saying, is that people don't want to invest in themselves. It's like, you know, they'll invest money into other things, and it's not
right.
even really investing. They will put money into things that won't have a return into it, and then
right.
you know, we have to be a little bit more intellectually curious because, you know, I took like for instance, I've gone to like you know some of Donald Trump's seminars. I've gone to a couple of these different things when they come around, and there's some
right.
great information that's that comes out of that stuff. Like I went in the
and for free.
Spirit.
I actually paid.
I went to the Donald Trump courses and paid for it. I'm that kind of person. I really, this is the thing about it. You have to, when you go to one of those things, you know, they give you a lot of information. But see,
mm-hmm.
the devil's in the details. You have to find one thing that you can use that can make good on your investment. So, for instance, I went to that, and I went to the Invest Tools course, okay? So I went to Invest Tools.
Oh, they upsold you?
No. When I went to Invest Tools, but see, this is the thing. I actually started doing options trading because of Invest Tools. I learned more about options trading through Invest Tools that I ever could imagine. So it was one of the best investments I made, and it helped me when I lost my job. I actually was able to help you know help keep me going. So it was a good thing. And basically,
and
you know when you start
not,
talking about.
Did that information not already pay for itself several times over?
Oh, it did several times over, and you know.
But
the,
you know what? He was active with it too.
Oh yeah.
You know, you have to be careful where you put your dollars because you could tell. You know, he's an intelligent young man. He does his research. He applies the knowledge that he gets, and so you know that was a benefit to him because he understood where he was going with it. So people have to be careful. You know, stay in your lane too. You know, don't just
do
it because. You know, somebody else is doing it and you want to, you know, jump on board because, I mean, there's a lot of information out there and you have to be careful. Like, I was looking at junk bonds today. I have no idea what a junk bond is, but they tried to make it sound so good. I was like, ooh, 10 to 12% return.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that was one of the things I learned about, you know, with the Invest Tools course, because, like, you know, I was like that. I was like, oh, man, 20%? Oh, man, you know.
Right.
And so you find that it's worthless, you know, because they're probably
right.
going to default on it. So, Right. You know, that, it looks good on paper, but yeah, you know, I did that, and I went to the Donald Trump stuff, and yeah, it helped me out just because I learned. I mean, it was just invaluable, the things I learned. But what I'll tell people is, like, you know, you find one thing and then you exploit that. You don't try to, like, if you can, you know, master all the concepts and find several things, that's even better. But you got to really find one or two things that you can work with, and then you can try to expand upon it later on. But yeah, the what you're talking about with the bonds now, you know, as far as, like, investing in savings, you know, bonds are great. I mean, the corporate bonds actually – there's some high-grade, you know, corporate bonds. If you go into the FINRA website, that's the regulatory authority that you know, they will show you, like, the kinds of bonds that are available. And, you know,
right.
You can get, you know, bonds. There's some AA bonds that you might be able to get that given 7%. And if a company with a certain capitalization on the stock market, meaning that it's worth so many
Yeah, and they were talking about the BBB rating.
yeah. But some of them, I mean, at one point, J.P. Morgan Chase had some 8% bonds. But they were a different class of bonds. But, yeah, I mean, J.P. Morgan Chase ain't going nowhere. So,
right.
You know, they have an 8% bond. I'd get some of those, you know. So if you understand, the difference between buying a premium, buying a discount, and
exactly.
You know, it's callable, and once you learn those things, you can, yeah, there's tons of opportunity in that. And those are some of the topics we're going to be covering. Like, there's another brother that's on here. His name is Omar Seda. He actually is from New York originally, too. And so he actually was on Wall Street. And he has an upcoming OSTH Financial. So what we're going to be doing is basically bringing in people from different disciplines. Like, you know, I'm going to be kind of be there, you know, I'm going to be basically the peanut gallery. I'm going to ask a lot of questions, and I'm going to try to bring in, you know, I could talk more specifically about mortgage banking and credit just from my experiences, you know, working for Citi. I've worked for Citi. I've worked for Bank of America. I've worked for Cendant. I've worked for some of the largest companies out there. So I've seen a lot of different scenarios. So I'd probably be more comfortable talking about that. And then, like, the brother who, you know, he actually works in the stock exchange, does options.
Right.
We'll talk about that. One guy who does currency. So, and we're going to take people from the basic level and then move them up. You know, so that's kind of what the goal is.
Right. Well, yeah, we definitely, need to chat because, one, I can, you know, utilize the information that you have to do the things that I need to do, definitely sharing the information with my listeners. And I'm really excited tonight, you know, that you guys came on. Right. I'm really excited that you guys came on and shared all the information because not only did I learn something, but I know I have so many listeners just sitting on the phone listening. So they're just sitting there getting schooled because usually they're pushing the buttons and they want to jump in and talk. But tonight they're listening. So that means that they were getting some information that they needed to better their lives and do the things that they need to do because it's rough out there with the credit and the financial situation. And before you came on the line, what Mr. Sterling was talking about is cash being king and credit being queen. I don't know if you had heard that part of the segment or not.
But he's right, yeah.
He's absolutely right. And the reason why I posed the question is because I had someone who called in on the line to listen tonight, and they had asked me earlier, they said, if you had $1 million cash, you know, would you go out and pay cash for your house? I know one thing, when I get my money, I'm cash this, cash that, and I'm like, but I had different reasons for why I wouldn't do it. I was thinking about, you know, especially with me being a business owner, I was thinking about tax write-offs, and I was thinking, you know, like Mr. Sterling was saying about,
you want me to tell you there's a secret behind that, okay? I used to date a young lady who was a tax attorney. Now, this is the thing. When you, even though you're paying less in taxes, your net disposable income is less. So even though, so because of your liability, so at the end of the day, you're better off paying the taxes on it. And with the whole concept behind you taking out the debt is that you can find an investment of, you know, higher return than you pay on the debt. Well, in this market cycle, there's no way to assume that. So what you're better off doing is getting it cash, and then because you don't have the liability, investing that cash flow that you would have paid toward a mortgage into an investment that maybe can give you a 6, 5, 6, 7%, but at least you're not, you know,
I'm telling you, you and Mr. Sterling been hanging out. I know you have. I know you guys are cousins.
Brother from another mother. That's what it is.
Right. I don't know what y'all been doing. Y'all done got that man thrown out of Bank of America. I don't know what you two have been up to. But you got the same information coming out of your mouth. And I'm excited because I definitely, when it comes to the things that Mr. Sterling has to say, I listen thoroughly because I know that he's a very intelligent man. And he doesn't speak about things that he doesn't understand, and he always says things like, you know, in my opinion, you know, this is the way it should be, you know, and you're repeating, like, things that he's been saying not only tonight but that I've just heard, and I'm really excited to see so many men being educated about this stuff because usually when it comes to this type of thing, you think that, you know, women, even though we have shopping problems, are the ones who are managing the finances, and it's really good to hear that these men are actually stepping up and, you know, giving us some guidance, leading us in the right direction.
African-American men.
What did you say, Natasha?
No, I said African-American men makes it feel
right.
Better.
Right. Right. So I'm loving it.
A lot of people
I'm
think that the finance
excited
is,
with, right.
is run by white men. It's not, and it doesn't have to be. It can be run by anybody because money is green in the U.S.
Right.
It's different colors in other places. But when you understand, like Mr. Sterling was saying, really what currency is, how it's used
right.
and how it's utilized, you begin to empower yourself, and that's the whole point of financial literacy, to empower yourself
right.
to make better choices so you don't feel helpless when a recession comes along. You understand that there's opportunity here. People are making money in the recession. It's people who don't understand what's going on that's losing money. But people make money. There are people who make money in a good market, bad market, challenging market, doesn't matter. Up, down, low, high, they really don't care because they understand the game. It's like playing checkers. You know, you can sit across from a two-year-old and teach them how to play checkers, and you can beat them all day long. But once that two-year-old understands the game of checkers, because they're a little quicker than you are, and because they can see things maybe in a way that you didn't see it before, they can actually master you at that game and beat you. And this is something. This is what we want for our children. We want our children to master the financial traps that are out there, and not just to surpass them, but to maybe take those financial traps and turn that into a money-making enterprise that no one thought of before because we are just that creative, because we have that knack for creating something out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the ability to do that here in this country more so than in other places.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's time. It's time. You know, it's time for us to get together. It's, you know, and the thing about it is, you know, it's like it has to be urgent. You know, it has to be
sense of urgency.
Now.
You're right about that.
Yeah, because we you know, every day we don't you know find ways to do business with each other. You know, the black dollar, I mean, pretty much goes straight out of the community. When you start talking about other races, you talking about the Asians. You talking about Indians.
Right.
Their money is recycled.
Right. That's why I want you guys to check out that website that I mentioned earlier, the 101050, because at the end of January, I'm going to do a show segment on it, and it just talks about you giving, you know, 10% of your income to black businesses, giving 10% of your time to your black community, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's very simple. You know what I'm saying? It's just very simple, and it's a very simple concept. It's not a strain. You know what I'm saying? It's just necessary. It's just necessary for us to start taking those trillions. I mean, trillions. I was astounded. I mean, I know I see, you know, chicks around here, you know, they got to have the Louis and the Prada, and they got to have the latest, you know, Gucci shoes and so on and so forth, whether it's knockoff or, you know, or mine are real, or whatever type of thing that they think holds some type of value or importance. I remember somebody asked me about school clothes for their kids, and I'm like, well, when I buy clothes, I buy whatever looks nice and is on sale. I don't look for tags, you know. I don't look for names, you know what I'm saying. I don't look for those things. So, you know, if that's important to you, then you're talking to the wrong person, because those things hold no weight with me as far as, you know what I'm saying. I much rather spend my money on something way more valuable, even if it's like, you know, spending time with my kids, something that they're going to remember, and not what they had on that, you know, end up getting a bleach stain on it and you're mad because you spent $80 on a shirt for a kid.
Yeah. Well, something important that people have to realize, you have to develop your team. Like, you have to develop your own team. Like, you know, if you're a business owner, you got to, you know, get you an attorney, get you a CPA, get you a person for your mortgage needs, person for insurance, person for your real estate. You have to develop a winning team in order for you to really be able to push forward, you know?
Now, let me ask you this. When you say all that, what comes to mind is the first thing it seems like you need to have is a financial advisor. It sounds like before you do any of that stuff, you need to, you know, have someone look at what your, if you can't do it, have someone look at your financial situation, like Natasha was saying, and break things down. Like, okay, what is it that I can do? What needs to wait? And how can I save or put things aside so that I can get that attorney, so I can get this team or these things in place so that I can be successful? Because, you know, as we know, it's challenging. And one thing that we didn't touch on that I really wanted to touch on, we touched on credit and the economy, was, and a little bit you guys talked about investments, but how do you start to create more income, you know, when jobs are scarce right now? You know, what things can you do? What suggestions would you guys say for people to start generating, you know, supplemental income, something to help them get by in these tough times?
Well, I mean, it goes back to what your talents are.
Everybody has a talent that somebody doesn't want to do. Everybody has one.
Exactly. It's so true.
You guys are saying use your whatever talent you have,
take that talent
and utilize it the best you can. Like, I have a friend, and that's a good point. I have a friend. She's always done parties. She's great at making favors and things like that. So now, instead of her friends getting, you know, high-priced people to do certain things to have, you know, a little bit of money to spend, she'll do parties for them. She'll plan their parties, or she'll do their party favors for them, or wedding favors and things like that. It's just a natural skill that she has. She has a full-time job, and that's what she does on the side.
And that's a great
Everybody has. Good, I'm sorry.
No, I was saying that's a great use of her talent. And what she understood is that if we stop saying there's nothing out there, we'll start to find something out there. That's a really, that whole point about the mindset, changing that point of coming from lack to start coming from abundance. I know people may say you hear that all the time, but it's so true. My grandmother always had a saying about us not keeping our purses on the ground. You know, she said, if you keep your bag on the ground, you keep your money low. And I never understood what she meant about that. What she was saying is, have respect for the abundance that you have. Don't treat things, you know, have respect for the talent that you have. Have respect for what you have, and you'll see that when you start to treat that with respect, you'll start to get more coming in. You know, when you start to come from a point of, you know what, I do have something that someone else wants, you will see that you can get that additional income coming in.
Right.
And sometimes you have to knock yourself down a peg or two, because sometimes we think we're a little too good to do that second job or to do something on the side, because we're kind of coming from the point of what my status is. You have to put your ego behind you all too often to get ahead, to get the things that you want.
Right, and that's exactly true. And being conscious about the things that you want. So, you know, we're running low on time, So I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up. I didn't mean to keep you guys so long. I didn't mean to keep my guests on the line so long. But this information, we're not even touching on the tip of the iceberg with the information, one, that you guys have given. And I know that people have questions, but it seems like they're so intimidated about finances. You know, they're scared to look at their credit. All day long, people have been hitting my Facebook page. They've been sending me messages. I can't wait to hear what they have to say. But the reality is that most people, their credit report intimidates them. Dealing with the creditors intimidates them. Being more educated about finances, learning about loans, learning about commodities, learning about these different things that are available to them is very intimidating, especially when you didn't grow up in a household where that was a common conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I'm starting a conversation, and I don't know everything to tell them, but the information that I do have to tell them, like start your own business. My 7-year-old kept saying how he didn't like this video game. I said, well, I would suggest that you start your own business creating your own game.
Yeah,
you love me so much. Why don't you create your own?
Yeah, you're in the Atlanta area. I don't know if you have looked at like the United Way for single mothers and people who are business owners or trying to start business. They have these things called individual development accounts where, you know, you can go in and, you know, it's used for one of three purposes. It's used for starting a business, for education, or for buying a home for first-time home buyers, and you'll technically fall in that standpoint. And they, in some states, they have the seed accounts for children for basically to bridge the gap for those who don't come from homes of means, and help them to start a savings pattern. So I don't know if they got seed accounts in Georgia, but if you go to cfed.org, cfed.org. You can go in there and, like I said, the United Way is one of them. You can potentially get an individual development account, and they can, do like a match fund. It's almost like a 401k on steroids. Like, they'll do sometimes a 4 or 5 to 1 match. Matter of fact, one of my closest female friends down there in Atlanta, she got a IDA, and I think they gave her, I think she put in $1,100, and they gave her like $5,500 towards the purchase of the home.
Wow. That's great information. I can't wait to talk to you offline so that I can get some of this information typed up and sent out to people, because that's great, great information and stuff that, like I said, with me considering myself to be educated about things, I stay on the internet, I stay looking into things. I haven't even touched on a fraction of the things that you've discussed today. And so that's like incredible. There's like a wealth of information out there. And had I not done this segment, these would have been things that just may or may not have come to me, may or may not. So, like I said, we're getting ready to close out, and I want my guests, Natasha and Sterling, to, close out with a final thought, and then also my caller, Thomas.
Yes, sincere. I'm sincere.
Oh, so sincere. Right. So, and then I'll let you close out. But go ahead, Natasha.
Well, I want people to really, the 2010, recognize that the opportunity for them is there for whatever they decide that they want to do. But the first step is to make the decision. Second step is to take the action. I follow the be, do, have methodology. If you want to be wealthy, you have to be that person. You have to see what wealthy people do. And wealthy people don't just take their money and blow it. Whatever you're seeing, that's not real. Understand that. Wealthy people understand what that currency is for, what that tool is for. And they do what needs to be done in order to keep it. They teach their children the information. They find out the information. They go ahead and they disseminate that for themselves, and they take action on it. And this is why they consistently have. And understand that it's a generational process. You may not have as much as you would like, but you have way more than your parents did. And it is a disservice for you, especially if you have children, to leave this earth and your children have less than you have. because you're leaving them with a load of debt. So if you consistently put yourself in the frame of be, do, and have, be the person that you want to be, do the things that they do, and you will have the life that you want.
Right. And Sterling?
I want to leave the listeners with be responsible. Be responsible and be accountable for your actions. You are responsible for everything that happens to you, good or bad, whether you like it or not, because you have a choice to react or do nothing. You have to react to when things are going good. You have to react to when things are going bad. You have
right.
to maintain a level of responsibility and accountability for your own actions and for your own attainment of life. Your lifestyle, no matter what it is, assumes a responsibility, and you have to assume that responsibility. So if you're responsible and accountable, you'll have an opportunity to be successful, and when the opportunity comes, take it and run with it like Carl Lewis did in the 80s, and like my
right.
man Bougie was running right now, bringing all these records. This is my man named the guy running 1919. Yeah, you know him today. Run that thing, baby. Run it. And be
right.
excited about your opportunities. Don't be intimidated by your opportunities. Be excited about your opportunities and be excited
exactly.
about the fact that you have survived through this deep recession, or I would call it depression, it's just not made public. You've survived it. Now what are you going to do with it?
Right. And I want to, and son, you want to go ahead?
No, I'm just here. It's just 7:50.
She must have logged out. But go ahead, Thomas. We got about 1 minute left, so make it real quick.
Okay, basically, there's information out there for everyone, and, you know, just keep your eyes and ears open. Be willing to think differently, change your paradigm in order to, you know, take advantage of those opportunities Mr. Searles talked about. And, you know, don't be afraid to reach out to people, because we're not here to belittle you and make you feel bad, degrade you. You know, we want to empower
right.
you with information. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I want to thank all of my guests for calling in tonight. I want to thank all of my listeners. I've been getting shout-outs from California, the Carolinas, Chicago, Louisiana, L.A., Atlanta. Thank you, everybody. New York. Okay. Florida. And I'm sorry if there's anybody that's listening tonight that I left out. I apologize, but this information, like I said, I see you, Callie. This information is crucial for you guys, and you need to know that going into 2010, that it is very, very important, like everyone said, to get your credit pull, to have a financial understanding about where you are in financial positioning. If we can spend trillions of dollars on Prada and Gucci, we can definitely spend trillions of dollars on educating ourselves and reinvesting to our community. So I want to thank everyone once again for tuning in tonight, as well as my guests, and we will see you guys next week. Happy New Year. I hope that everybody is able to do everything that they want to do and need to do in 2010. It's going to be an awesome year, and, you know, some great things coming up with the Nico Sherie Show. So I'll be seeing you guys next week, same time, same place, and have a good night.